Okay, that's on the order here.
This has been a work in progress, and I want to tell you first our process we're having here. That was a live mic. This won't be the last meeting. I know, Tom, you're sad about that. And it's good to come together more often if we possibly can. And so this is the almost last meeting. What we're going to do today is we're going to amend five different bills to get them in the order that they will be voted on Wednesday. We'll meet Wednesday at 4:30 in this thing. They'll find a room somewhere. And then I think that'll give people a chance to, this has been, I think there's no real surprises in these bills we're going to amend today, but I think so people have a little more clarity, because they're going to go to five different destinations. Some of these bills we will never see again. Most of them hope we do see again, but you never know how these things go. So with that in mind, that'll be our intention. And then by the time we get done, Jennifer will have to find out what room might be available. Would the minister approve? I think Sarah's taking on the Sarah Mary. I'm going to take on the job of the minute approvers of the division here. So.
I move that we approve the minutes.
Wasn't there an amendment on the minute? We have to clarify an attendance matter. So with that amendment. Members excused in both cases, that they'll be, well, except the minutes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? They're adopted as amended. Okay. First, we're going to take up House File 2832. Which is the bill formerly known as the reinsurance bill. And we're going to take up Amendment 2832. E1, is that the neat one? Thanks. And this bill is going to go to Commerce, and what I'll do, there's one thing we need to figure out yet, Tom, on this one. This is all the Commerce stuff we've worked on, and this will be the, and then this will go to Health, and what's to the left of that, that's the grueling meeting, we'll move on to Commerce. So the staff is beautifully sifted through the bills that we've been working on and found all the Commerce stuff. Unfortunately, there's no statewide reinsurance pool here. I apologize to those who wanted to go forward. There's such a clamor in part of the audience to have that. And I think, as we mentioned before, there's been a little increase in the state coffers because of lobbying efforts to have that not go forward. But anyway, so what you'll find is the meat bill is in here still, and I'll go over that a little bit with you. Just to give you the overview first. MEEP is in here. That goes all the way up to page 5, 6. That's all the way up to page 7. And what we've done in this, it's even though this is not going to become operational tomorrow, I think that it's smart to get this to be operational. The governor would want to do this. And I'll explain that in a second. There's $1 million put forward here for startup monies as a loan from the Healthcare Access Fund, again, to be repaid at timely times. The way you don't need any reserves out of this is the board will decide that the people can pay up to 3 times the first month's premium to get them the reserve. Their goal was to get 20-29% premiums, which that accomplishes. So you don't have to have any pot of money. If you start trying to build reserves with anybody more than a couple thousand people, you get some real money involved, and it's virtually impossible to stake it out, to stake it, get them their startup stake. It occurred to me that $1 million would be enough to get this thing running if ever the governor decides to appoint a board. The start button on this thing would be the governor appoints the board to get it going. And then at that time, they could draw $1 million out if they wanted. They could also borrow money if they wanted to at their own board's desire and pay it back to where they borrowed it from at their own choice. The board in this matter, this is actually a very autonomous, it would be a quasi-public group. Board entity. The governor appoints and they would report back and so on. So that's the status of MEEP. The goal would be to work with private employers in particular in an effort to pool. You'll notice in the last part of the bill where the co-ops are mentioned, we talked about they have some duties that they get and also some opportunities. One of those is that they'll be allowed to enroll nursing home employees. This is a group of people we've had a really hard time serving to get them into plans. And so a nursing home would have to come in all or none, right, Mr. Pender?
Yes.
Yeah, they have to come in all or none. And my thought is that since they're not really public employees, they're kind of quasi, since we pay all their money from the feds. And they're also a group that has significant need in terms of trying to get them into a group insurance plan, that in time there might be enough of those that they could actually be the starting pool for the NEAT group, if that would ever happen, or some other groups that come forward that want at the same time exist. So at this point, I guess the members have questions about Article 1. This is not your last chance, but it's a good time to ask questions about that. We've discussed this before. There's a 10-member board, and it's made of employees and employers. Or is it mostly employers? I've forgotten. It's been so good to address. Mr. Pender, tell me who's on the board again.
Mr. Chair, I think it is five employers, two representatives of employees, and three public members.
Okay, yeah, that's it. So it's meant to be a group designed to make it go forward. That's been a problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple. Where was the nursing home employees?
That's at the last page. That's under the. Some of this, they're not tied to this at all. This is merely establishing a shell that could be activated should the administration decide to activate it. The specific location on the nursing home part. Let's see. Maybe the very last page. Page 11. Up on the top, line 11.1 and 11.6.
I know.
So we'll allow co-ops to issue them policies.
Okay, and also, Mr. Chairman, on the appropriation on section 2 of page
7.28.
Yeah. We've had this conversation about using healthcare access funds for these type of things, so give me some comfort here that why you think that this is the best thing to do. For the public employees, you knew where I stood on the PEEP,
right.
But I'd like to hear your thoughts on this.
And by the way, in PEEP, there will be no appropriation. And the reinsurance took an appropriation, but we have gotten rid of that bill that is gone now. This is replacing that. It's just some startup money so they can get a copier and get going and get the administrative expenses. If you find me a better source, I'd be very happy to entertain that. It was just a simplicity thing. $1 million is a number I just kind of picked. I don't know if they need $1 million. Maybe they need $100,000 and they can get their office and get it going.
I think, Mr. Chairman, it would be a safe bet they'd take the million.
But if that interest has to be paid back.
Okay.
So I'm open to suggestions about that.
I appreciate the fact that we're going to have a time to digest this and kick it around.
If you find a better source, I think there'd be a friendly amendment.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, just a question on that nursing home. Maybe Mr. Pender can answer. I believe that Representative Knobloch had a bill that would have opened up for service co-ops to offer products in the non-public sector. Is there something more that has to be done? Are service co-ops specifically limited into whom they can offer products?
Mr. Chair and Representative Bradley, the authorizing legislation for service co-ops is very broad and non-specific, but I'd say it is limited. They are limited under current law to school districts and other local governmental units.
And Mr. Chair, I think I've told you, I'm not opposed to the idea. That the only thing I'd be careful about is that we do it right, so that if we've got to change someplace in order to authorize them to be able to do this thing, that we attend to that. So that's just kind of a comment to follow.
That's on page 11, I think. So they're listed on page 11.
Is that
that's under the service co-op section. We listed them out specifically.
Well, I understand they're listed up specifically. What I don't know is if you have to change some other statutes to allow them to offer products to the non-school, non-current entities.
Mr. Pender,
take a look at that.
So, but if we meet Wednesday, you'll have an answer.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'll take a look at that. But
that's
what I was
doing.
I appreciate it. Anything else?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, if I may, I think about a couple of other areas that I'd at least make comment for today. Under Section 4 on page 9 about medical malpractice insurance report, I've long thought, and you know, we've had long debates on this, and everybody's got their opinion about the market, but if one is going to discuss the subject of medical malpractice, it seems to me that the bigger hit in cost really is in defensive practices, and I'm not exactly sure how to integrate that. But we miss the mark, I think, in the need for reforms in this area if all we talk about is what the premiums look like. So just a thought there.
Well, could we ask the boards to survey their members and ask them to report on what they determine to be, what kind of work they do?
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for you, Mr. Chair, about how to integrate that. It's just in order to sort of look at that subject, I believe by what I've read that we probably have more costs that are driven into the healthcare system by defensive practices because of the potential threat of the lawsuits than just the actual premiums themselves. The premiums themselves, I think we've had pretty good testimony that say that the emergency services and OBGYN areas are really the key areas that sometimes it isn't just the premiums, it's even getting insurance, period.
Right.
But this kind of a thought.
Should we try to do something?
Well, maybe something for thought. And then the third point, it actually starts on page 7, the bottom of page 7, the private sector health coverage provisions. We've had some discussions. I'm still struggling a little with this idea of raising across the board to the age of 25 and to let that be a sort of considered dependent consideration. I understand your motivation, but I feel a little personally uncomfortable raising the age that far. There are such things as personal responsibility. That one, I'm not asking for any change. I'm just telling you that I personally am a little uncomfortable with that section.
Well, and this was brought up just last time when we haven't had testimony on it. Should we take a minute of testimony about that? Maybe is there someone who wants to testify in the audience about this? One of the plans want to come up? I did ask the plans to tell me if this was going to increase costs and be a burden. I know that randomly if a person goes to school, they're in up to this age. And so that's an option. Does somebody want to testify on this? Or
Mr. Chairman? Is this it was just a year or so ago that we've made some changes in this section of law in the past. Is that correct?
Mr. Pender?
I'm not a phone friend, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Paul. Was this changed lately?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
There's a big line of people wanting to testify on this thing that Rips and Bradley there. See the line there? If you do you want some talk, or do you want to? Yeah, I see two hands up there. So. And while they're coming, I'll remind everybody of my goal in this. We have to find ways to shore up the group coverage. If we don't, we're going to find ourselves being asked to do many things that are very expensive and not even as good. So that's my motivation here. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeanette Coleman. I'm with Medica. We don't necessarily have a position on whether this is a good thing to do or a bad thing to do. Certainly, this is more of an employer issue, and I wish we had representatives from the employer community who will be taking on some of those additional costs. There is also just something to think about. There are tax implications of doing this as well because the definition of dependent will not match up with the federal definition of dependent, so there could be some tax ramifications to parents who then this would be considered income.
And, you know, one thing I've mentioned and even offered during the hearing, I don't mind if these young adults now would even be bearing their own costs. I would think that would be the cheapest way to get them into a plan would be to piggyback on their parents the next $100 a month or something like that. And so maybe what you could do in the meantime, just I don't want to cause harm to the market, but I know if we don't do something to shore up the groups, we're going to have ourselves in worse trouble next year and in 2 years from now. So maybe you could see if that we need to put some language, permissive language allowing the
employer or somebody to pass on those costs, and at least they'd be offered a chance, and would that be of value, Representative Bradley?
Could be. Just let me give you kind of at least one aspect of why I'd be concerned. I remember several times that I've had sort of profiles of typical uninsured people, and one category of those are young adults. But it's by choice. And what I would worry about is that if you look at family, a lot of times family policies, you're going to pay a little more if you have more than just the couple. That's pretty typical. And in the case of a family or that young person, the same philosophy would probably say, why should we bother? You know, I'm perfectly healthy. And what I worry about is adverse selection then. What that means is if you have a condition or something, you're going to stay on it, and that's going to aggravate for a business, and particularly a small business, even more, to carry the liability of people even longer. So
those are all valid points. Other members, comments? Do you want to do the homework and see what you can figure out about that? About costs and what you ask some of your business. Is that reasonable to ask to do that in 2 days?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. I think that is one thing where it would be good for you to hear from the business community on this issue, because they really would be the ones to bear any additional costs on this. So we can make sure that they...
Bill. And actually, this is put in as a bill today, too, just so that people... it'll be in the public. It gives good notice to people, too. I try to do that with some of my major amendments to make them into bills. So. Okay, thank you very much. Other questions on this? We're on this whole section. Is there any questions on the meat part? Okay, and Mr. Pender, there was something that I think we need to clarify yet on the co-op portion. We had talked about release of information, claims data. Was there a section about that, or was that not included?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Was that in language I didn't
that section? That section is on, that item is on page 11, line 9. There's a general law that applies to insurance companies and requires them to provide that data. And so this cross reference here makes the service co-op subject to that law.
And what who do they have to give that information to under that section?
To the employer.
To the employer. Either would it either be in the case of a educational thing, would it be the bargaining unit or the school board, or just the school board?
Just the school board.
Right. And that's customary.
Yes, that's a general law that applies across the board in health coverage in Minnesota.
Right. And I'm curious, are the co-ops here today? Yeah, hi. I want to ask you a question. I think the co-ops are in a little... Let's see, well, maybe they're the same. Mr. Walseth, identify yourself, please.
Mr. Chair, members, Sam Walseth with the Minnesota Service Cooperatives.
Welcome. We had talked about releasing it to either... Your custom is to give it to either the bargaining unit or the school board. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And so... it was kind of our desire to clarify, to spell out your current practice in here, just so people are clear. Mr. Pender, should we make that more clear for this? Because this is just for the co-ops, right?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
So that would be, I think, a good thing, right? Do you want to help us clarify that for next time?
Yes,
Mr. Maybe Mr. Walsh, if you can talk to Mr. Pender. We'll have is that something you can do now, or should we wait for Wednesday? Wednesday's fine with me. If I don't want to...
I think I could do it now, Mr. Chair, if you give me a few minutes.
Okay, thank you.
Go on to other things for a little while, maybe.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions from members?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Paul.
What's the path for this particular bill?
This bill would be destined for commerce, and eventually the governor's desk, I would expect. maybe it's quite a little different than you see it now. It would go to the health committee when they have their health day. And then this will go to commerce. We're going to have five different bills. That'll go five different directions.
Okay.
So it'd be my intention at this point to move that I'll move the 28H2832DE1 amendment into the bill, and there would be no motion on the bill at this time. We would act on the moving the bill Wednesday. Oh, Representative Bradley, we're going to meet 4:30 Wednesday. One more day. Any questions about that motion? Any discussion to the amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That's adopted. So now people can know what that... I think that was...
Mr. Chair, just a
Representative Bradley.
Point to Representative Paul's question. Since it does call for money from the Health Care Access Fund, it would have to come back to the Health Care Committee for final consideration as part of the
bill. Oh, good point. Unless you can find some better source of money that's free.
Yeah, right.
Donations, maybe. That. And Mr. Pender, we just kind of put a placeholder for money. Do you have any idea what it might cost to start up that kind of a... Is that a lot of money for them to spend, or would they do it in a couple hundred grand?
Mr. Chair, I don't know, but I mean, to start up, they'd need to have an office, hire employees, make their existence known,
sure,
somehow through advertising or otherwise. But I don't really have any idea. I can't suggest a number.
Yeah. I didn't have an idea either. So if anybody has an idea, what's a good number? I'm open to that. Representative Huntley, you have an idea about the number?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, somebody might go and look what we put into MEEP and PEEP when they started.
Oh, yeah. I know who might do that. We'll have an answer for you. I just want to commend Tom Pender. He has worked really hard on this stuff, and we're making him work hard again, but his institutional memory has been admirable. Let's take up now... The JT AMD02 amendment. This is the tax deduction. This is going to go on House by 1863, which is a bill that's been sitting quietly on our in our division here. I don't recall it even a bill bid before, but it was a dandy little bill. Might have been e-records or something. That's the e-record loan. And so it wants to live again, so it's going to go to taxes. Anyway, this is a very straightforward piece of legislation. It allows premiums to be deducted for paid by individuals as they're deducted now on people who pay groups by the employer. So I think all the action language is on page 4. And this would go as a standalone bill to taxes to be considered for action there, and they'll do what they want with it. Any questions about that, members? We will not vote on the bill. We'll just vote to put the amendment in, assuming there's no questions on the amendment.
Chair?
Representative Huntley.
So, if I understand, any individual that buys insurance in the individual market will be able to deduct the entire premium from his state taxes?
Is that correct, Mr. Pender?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
That's correct. We can't do the federal tax thing.
Mr. Chair, I'd only say that that's a good benefit to people that make more than $100,000 a year, and not as important a benefit to those that make $20,000 a year.
So is that a comment of neutrality or excitement, or
just
a comment?
Mr. Chair, the tax deductibility of various features of health care is becoming a very controversial item nationally and in the state, because unless you draft the bills correctly, it does greatly benefit people at the higher end of the spectrum and not so much for people at the lower end of the income spectrum.
Fair enough. Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, I think Representative Huntley, though, the point is that we have really an unfairness in today's system where if you're in a group policy, it is. And, I mean, this is going to be a little tricky because of the money part, but from a policy point of view and fairness, it seems like everybody ought to be on the same basis.
Well, fair enough. This will be, I'm not sure taxes will adopt this right off the bat, so... anyway, so I'll first move House Law 1863 to be before the committee from the pile of where it was sitting for somebody's office. And then I'll move the JTAMD02 amendment. Any questions? All those in favor of that say aye.
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 Opposed? That amendment's adopted. All right.
Now, what we'll do is take up the bill you're more familiar with, which is the amendment for H2438DE8-2. To get to be a DE8, you have to have been around a while. To be a dash 2, you have to have been around even longer. So, some of these versions have not been seen. There is an amendment to this one. There's a couple amendments, I think. And as the staff knows, the amendment for the hospitals for the is that here, April? Do I have that? Oh, that's it. That was awful simple. Okay, let's talk about, let's get the amendments taken care of. This the first one, which is the A4 amendment, has to do with cleaning up the language about the uncompensated care. And there is a bill that's going to go in talking about community benefits. We're not going to confuse community benefit with charity care. And maybe staff can review the amendments with me, because I've not seen it either. So the group's worked on this to shorten it up and, I think, focus on cost. Is that what this does? Well, tell me what it does. What's it do?
Well, it just, Mr. Chair and members, it removes the unneeded reference, and then it deletes the paragraph C, D, and E. That particular piece, and I believe that piece is going to be carried in a different bill somewhere else, is what I was told, in a different format.
So pretty much it takes out the whole last, everything after 526 is gone then.
Yep.
Are the hospitals here? Oh yeah, why don't you come down here, Ms. Stone. Maybe staff can answer this for me, too. I know we had talked about using cost as the standard. Did that get worked on, or is that still, we're not doing that now? Or?
Mr. Chair, members, we believe that the language does accomplish that. And so all we really needed to do as we looked through the language was to take the community benefit language out and that's writing in the other bill, and make a minor clarification on page 4, line 31, the employed by the facility omission. But we believe that it accomplishes that.
So next time one of your good doctors from somewhere or administrators comes and tells me that they're giving out $19 million in charity care, I'm going to know that that's their cost of the care?
That's okay. Correct.
And members, let me, I'll take your in staff and agree with that, I hope. Tell me it's true. Because the trouble that I've seen, and the reason this is in the bill, is just for information purposes, because people come for us every year or two and talk about what they've given away, and we're glad they did that or sorry they had to. It's not an apples-to-apples comparison, and so we've heard quite a bit of dialogue about how unclear that is to us, and at least that way you can get credit for what you're doing. And now we'll be, if this is correct, and I believe that you're correct, is that we'll know that when they give away $19 million, that's $19 million of their cost. Which could be, well, $40 million retail. Is that correct? Okay. Any questions about that? And was this part of this in rule? We moved it to statute. Am I right about that? Maybe a comment about how much this was rule and how much is new. Mr. Pender?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure. This was last year that I took this out of rule and put it in here, and I'm not sure anymore which part that is.
Has this been tweaked up a little bit? It's been cleaned up a little bit?
Yes.
Have we worked on it?
Mr. Chair, it has, and to be honest with you, I don't have the rule with me, so I can't remember which parts were which. I think what's important here from our perspective is that it's a consistent way of talking about charity care and uncompensated care, and that it will flow with the what they're called the HCSIS reports that hospitals fill out right now. So we believe that
that when this is reported, this should be very clear what's charity care, what's uncompensated care.
Okay, thank you. And members, I'm going to move the, first I'll move the delete all just to get it before us, H243DE-2, if I didn't move it before, I'll move that now. Then I'll move the H243A4 amendment to do what we just did. Any questions? All in favor?
Oh. Vote on the delete all first, don't we?
Do we?
What do you think? To replace it.
Okay, let's take the first vote. I'll move the movement on the delete all first. All in favor of the delete all, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The delete all is adopted. I'll move the A4 amendment. Is that clear to members? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Should wait to gavel until after we vote, I guess. All opposed? That's adopted. Okay. Now the A5 amendment is on page 7. And to clean up that alternative and complementary health care section, see, Mr. Chung wrote this. So this takes out the lines 27 to 29 and inserts this language in.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Powell?
I do not see an A5 in my stack. Can I place it?
This get passed on?
I got it now.
Okay.
Thank you.
You just added the A4, now we're adding the A5.
And what it does, I wasn't my intention necessarily create more use of alternative company health care providers that aren't already in the system. That was a technical error in the amendment. And so the intention was that they'd use methods through their current provider network and others if they want, I suppose. But we don't address who shall do it, just that they would not expand their provider group. And last year, we approved a medical director and that committee, and they would be the ones that should do this more appropriately than the commissioner. So I think that cleans it up and makes it quite clear, and it talks about evidence-based research, because it might not be, anyway, that's just clarifying. And they incorporate those into the state programs as appropriate, so I think it's way cleaner. Members have questions? And you can digest this over the next 2 days if there's any technical pieces about it. Seeing none, I'll move the A5 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Now I'll gavel it. That's passed. There's a couple more small ones on this. Representative Bradley.
Chair, just on the bottom of page 4, line 4.36, it's a line that I agree in concept, but I'm worried about its definition. It says charity care does not include bad debt. If you talk to 10 people about what does bad debt mean, you get 10 different views of what that means, and I wonder if we have any definition in statutes anyplace to clarify that.
Ms. Stout, you want to come back to the table and just... you want to consult first? We can let you have a quiet... we can just do it in public or in private. Private's fine with me, then you can give the answer if you want. You ready to answer?
I'm sorry, I missed the question.
Line 4.36 in the delete all amendment, it says charity care does not include bad debt. I'm okay with the concept. What I wonder about, though, is bad debt can mean lots of different things, and whether or not we have something specific somewhere in the statute that defines bad debt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bradley, we have language in rule that defines bad debt, but not in statute. And we do take an attempt at sort of, when you say this isn't bad debt, it's trying to help kind of define those buckets a little bit more. But on page 5, line 5.24, is another little piece of language that's an attempt at saying what bad debt is, as unpaid deductibles, co-insurance, co-payments, etc. One of the concerns that we had is we wanted to be sure that as you're giving discounts from full charges. The difference between, let's say, for example, what Blue Cross Blue Shield pays you for a bill and what you might consider full charge, that difference is not bad debt. It's not like they're not paying their bill. It's a deduction. It's a lesser charge. Bad debt is really when you bill somebody and they don't pay it. And so we wanted to be sure that we separate that out.
Does that help, Representative Bradley?
Not enough.
How would you fix that?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how, but let me just sort of use, for instances, and I actually have run into this in different interpretations. Some might say that, because it does say, presume that a patient's able and willing to pay unless the facility has reason to. And there is something in here about percent. I have, in some cases in the past, found places that I thought were pretty much forgiving something as charity care when they had not made, in my own personal opinion, a good faith enough effort to collect. And somewhere you got to have an idea of when does it. I mean, even a business doesn't write off as bad debt right off the bat. You have some sort of time. Does everybody get billed, or do you automatically assume that somebody who's under a certain level is charity care versus bad debt? And if you do have somebody who you bill, you could argue that everybody should be billed, and then everything's bad debt. I don't think that's what this is advocating, and I agree that that's not necessarily the case. But I think having a pretty vague definition, and if we're going to put it in statute, then I think if there is something in rules, I would suggest maybe we need to draw that into here so it's a lot more clear as to what bad debt really means.
Well, there's two more opportunities to look at this from your direct perspective. One is on Wednesday, and the next is whenever it comes up in your committee.
Okay.
So I think that people are friendly to that. I know I am. And so maybe the hospitals can put together some thought and talk to the chair and see what you...
We certainly would be happy to try to clarify that. And certainly that's... What you're describing has been a source of discussion among the hospitals. And, we certainly would be happy to work with you to clarify that a bit more.
Okay. Mr. Pender?
And we'll look through the rules as well.
Mr. Pender?
Mr. Chair, I think that actually most of the verbiage here on page 4 and page 5 is an attempt to draw that line between bad debt and charity care. For instance, on page 5, lines 7 to 9, it talks about that if they've used to collection actions and been unsuccessful, they can't count that and so on. And I do think this is, I'm pretty sure this is the stuff that it was that I took last year from the rules on trying to draw this line between bad debt and charity care.
I think we beat that pretty well for now. So we'll just, if there's interest in working in the meantime. Mr. Pender, I've got a question for you. I actually can't read a note at the same time. You want to read your notes first? I do have an amendment on page 7. Sorry. We're running a good committee. It's good and casual. On line 7, 13, the Commissioner of Health, we need to make that back to a May. It's gone both ways, and so line 7, I'm going to move to make the shall to May.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Page 7. Page 7, line 13, okay. Section 12, the infections. And people wonder why we even need this. And my thought is that I think that there's a feeling in our body that we do care about these kind of infections. We don't want to be too prescriptive. We don't want to be running ahead of some other efforts that are going in the same direction. But I think it's good to show support for that. That's on our minds. When you do the May, then they can, if they find a federal grant or some money laying around that you just have to spend, they could then invest it in this part. If it made sense to their public health interests. And then if they do that, they have to let us know if they worked on it. But until they choose to get engaged into it, they don't have to do anything. And so it doesn't carry a fiscal note then either. And then Mr. Pender, I have a question on line 7 to the same section, 7.16. If it turns out that they'd rather worry about nursing homes and not hospitals, does the word and cover that, or should we make it and or?
Mr. Chair, I guess I'd say maybe since you have May in line 13 now that they can... we can make it and or. I mean, that would
okay, be... I think I'll do that just to make it further. We want to give them flexibility. So I'll move on line 713. We convert, we delete the strike to shall and insert may. And then on line 716, after the and, what is it, a slash or something, or however that gets revised. Questions about that, members? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That's adopted. I need to go back and ask Mr. Pender my questions. On page, on line 2, page 2, line 2.7, that's the electronic billing assistance. Is there a large employer who needs any assistance? I don't want to leave any of them out. If there's somebody who really needs some help, some rural hospital might be considered a large employer. I suppose they're all electronic, but maybe they wouldn't have to be. So is the word small not necessary, is it there?
I don't know, Mr. Chair.
And I think phenomenal.
Small provider is not defined either, so...
Yeah, so I think I'm going to move to delete the word small. So on line 2.7, I'll move to delete the word small, just to make it providers. And they're only offering them assistance, so it's... They're encouraging them, too, and it's hard to be a large or a small provider some days, so... All in favor of that, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted. Oh, and then on line 8, this the final, the language of studies, I don't know that we need to only have free or reduced care. I'm interested in availability of care, especially since we're trying to move people into plans. I would suggest that we, this is my section anyway, but I suggest that we strike on line 8.1 and 8.3 and 8.6, free or subsidized, because that would include that. But it might also see what other kind of care could be available as well. I think it just limits it, doesn't hurt the bill. Might give it a better chance to pass. Any questions about that? Seeing no questions, I'll just move the deletion of those three phrases. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted. Any questions about this section, about the whole DE-8? Okay, well that bill is now in order. This next one here is where I beg indulgence from some of the members here. This is going to go on House Bill 2831. We're going to move to pick up the JTAMD01. And it's probably just as well waiting for a couple days to talk about to act on this. There's a new provision here which is going to be a bill. It's being jacketed now. In our work with the medical malpractice and all of that, we're trying to find language to talk about defensive medicine. There's some language in here which I know is controversial to some members in this division about the ambulance limits being the same. And that's not new language, that's old language. But this... Should this survive this division and survive the health committee, this would make its way to the civil law committee to face, I would suggest, an uncertain future there. But that's where it's going to go. And I'm even open when we vote on this to move it without recommendation just to get it there so they can talk about it. But the second part is a new thing which was brought to my attention just last week by a woman who's going to spend some time talking about this. She's the spouse of a physician. And ran across this in some of her national research, and this is the liability relative to the use of a provider's apology. And I understand, this may be something I think we can agree on, and at least as a way to move the ball forward into having better care and maybe a few less lawsuits that are not necessary to be had, while still protecting people's right to recover what they have coming. And this says only that if the doctor, after he does whatever misdeed he's going to get sued for, says he's sorry he cut off the wrong leg, then that wouldn't be held against him in the court of law. And so the leg is missing, obviously, he cut it off, so there's still plenty of room to go there, but at least maybe if he's nice to the woman, they might not, you know, they could get him you know, whatever they would do. But I don't want to be too facetious for this, a very serious matter. But it seems like it's a kind of ingenious to me that this might be something that could achieve success on the two camps. Might actually say, well, we could agree on that. But we've not agreed on much yet in the multiple camps on the liability issues. So, Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, this is, I'm not sure if it's been passed yet, but there's an agreement in the state of Washington between the governor and the Physicians Association and the trial lawyers.
Yeah.
to approve something very similar to this. And it is something that that may work. A lot of the lawsuits that are filed are simply for the patient to try to find out what happened. And they find out later that it was a relatively minor thing that the doctor may have caused, and then the suit goes away. And in many cases, simply apologizing causes the suit not to appear.
Yeah, and as I understand from this woman who is, she'll probably meet a bunch of you, she's going to work on this, and I think it deserves some work, that very often the doctor has to kind of just now be quiet. Oops. So they have to can't say anything. And so, no, that was supposed to fall off, you know, just by being quiet. And so now this very friendly provider is no longer the friendly provider. He has to just, you know, kind of dummy up. So anyway, so if, yeah.
A further point on just what you said, actually, it's... some cases, physicians and hospitals receive training on how not to release the information to the patient about what happened to the patient.
That's probably a different bill.
So, this is, I'm not sure this is the proper language yet, but it's a good idea.
Well, if members want to try to find this way, I think the idea is, this is just draft language brought to me, and if you can find a way to tweak it up, maybe there's somewhere to go. So, that'll be, could happen. So, we're going to strip out, this is going to go on 2831. And if members are more comfortable with a vote of, with a no recommendation move to get it to commerce, to civil law, if you could stand that with it intact, I'm, you know, whatever. So that won't be for today. Today we're just going to, I'm going to move that we move the JTAM. Wait, no, we have to get the bill back up. Okay, I'm going to move 2831. And then I'm going to move the JTAMV01. No, that's not on this bill. That's a different bill. That's going to go on a different bill. Anyway, so that's the motion is to put this bill, not as, this is the bill formerly known as, whatever it's known as, now it's going to be known as JTAMV01, the liability bill going to civil law. Any questions about that, members? And if you have homework in the meantime, there's lots of chance to work on this one. It'll be many stops. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
That's a pretty enthusiastic show of support. All those opposed? Thank you. That's adopted, and it's now the bill is in order. And the vote to move it out will be taken.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So the first section there has to do with
that's the ambulances.
Just ambulances. Right. So that was Duke's bill from last year.
Right. And that was in the that was in the DE-8-2, and so we excised it out there. And so whatever survives that will go off to civil law. Now we're going to take up a bill that's been sitting quietly, House File 1862. Oh, yeah, well, Mr. Pender.
I think maybe some people are confused here. Did you mean to amend that those items, those civil law items, into House File 2831, I think that's what you said.
Right.
But yes, I did.
You did?
Yeah.
Into the PEEP?
Right.
Okay.
We're going to put them on another one.
So PEEP is gone for now?
Well, momentarily.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we killed the PEEP, though.
Yep.
Yeah. Wait, that would be it. That does delete everything.
Okay.
So what it was is I discovered... Wait. I discovered three bills I'd forgotten we had here, so I'm using two of them to... provide the extra duty to. Now we'll take up House Law 1862, which I think was.
Let's keep the minutes.
This is the last one. No, you don't have the bill in front of you, and so we're going to delete it all anyway. We're just using the vehicle. We need the suspension system, and so we're not taking up 1862, which is the capital reporting bill, which has nothing to do with this. Actually, it's somewhat related, but it's not. And so now we'll take up, and Mr. Pender will have to offer an amendment to the amendment to, we'll be taking up H2831DE1, which is going to go to 1862.
Sorry.
Okay. So we take 2831 off there and put in 1862. Right.
Okay.
And this is now the peat bill. And this may change yet if there's language coming out. I'm not sure if the administration is going to have some language also working on this, but this is going to go off to state government finance and or policy. I think certainly finance, but...
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative.
Will it come back to health and eventually?
There's no health care access money in this anymore. So I think this is, when it leaves this division and the health committee, we're done with it. And it'll go and spend its life as a state government project. And hopefully become law in some manner or other. Now, I do need to make an amendment. And maybe I can just incorporate these into my amendment here. Changing 2831 to 1862 on line 1.1. On line 2.6, we're going to strike, Mr. Pender, the nursing homes are not going to be part of this product. So 2.6, we're going to strike that line, the nursing home is defined. We also need to, you can make sure I didn't forget any. On line 2.34, maybe we should take out nursing home and put it in townships. Would that make sense?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So on line 2.34, we're going to strike nursing homes and insert townships. And then on line 3.6, what's the Minnesota Association of Townships called? Is that? Okay, the AMT. Association of Minnesota Townships. So we're going to strike Minnesota Association of Nursing Homes and insert Association of Minnesota Townships. And the we've already given the nursing homes an opportunity in the co-ops. I was hoping to create a dueling opportunity. But this group, this PEEP is purely public employees, and so that way we preserve the purity of their function. And at another time, maybe they can take that over. But that's not even the desire of doer right now anyway, so it's no harm. So any questions about that? I'll move that amendment then. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. That adopted. And actually what we've done in this, we've tried to clarify who will be on the old committee was appointed by the commissioner. In this case, they're still appointed by the commissioner, but each group provides two people and they get to pick one of the two. So it's appointed, so the cities and townships and counties and labor groups get to put their own people up, and then the commissioner gets some flexibility based upon geographic balance and gender and whatever else they might want to balance based on. Not that. Oh, should we adopt? Oh, we should move the DE1 amendment first, and then we'll amend it, I guess. So. Is that okay? Is that what you want? So I'll move the DE1 amendment to be amended here pretty quick. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Two questions.
I'm going to, let's just, we need to get it in front of us. I just pulled
up. We're going on to what? Okay.
Well, we're just going to adopt it. So all in favor of adopting the DE1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. That's adopted, and then we've done oral amendments, and now Representative Beeson.
Okay, that was the DE1 on PEEP that we're talking about?
Right, we're on 2831 DE1.
And one other question, if I could, Mr. Chair. Backing up to the... apology. Did we send that actually to civil law?
No.
But that's
no, we
just, on Wednesday.
It's all, we're not voting anything to go out today. So, you can, we're going to do that on Wednesday. Whatever remains of it after we get done with it. Mr. Pender, I have a question for you on line 5. On line 522, I think I'd rather that it may be 3 times the regular premium. I want to give the board some authority. Is that appropriate to not require that they would charge extra money?
Mr. Chair, I think that's reasonable.
Okay, I'd rather change. So on line 522, we're going to make the must into a may. And then because that we have to align 524 after the word premium, insert if paid.
If paid?
If paid. Is that correct, Mr. Pender? So people wouldn't want to get a refund of what they didn't pay. It's very technical. I mean, it doesn't matter.
But should that be at the end of line 27?
Line 24.
Oh, okay.
After 2 months, premium if paid must be refunded. And what we're doing here is for new groups coming into PEEP, there's a reserve issue. And so the commissioner has the authority to charge them up to 3 times to get their reserves established, and maybe they don't need so much reserves. And so the if paid allows that they only charge them 1 month if they leave. They get their 2 months back assuming the thing isn't collapsing and they, you know, there's some money left. And so if they're there for the 3-year term, it expires, things are going fine, they get back their 2 months. Or they don't, so it's not lost money. So the question of who owns the reserves, if assuming all things go as they expect, they belong to the payor. So I'll move that. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Another question? Okay. And then on line 610, and I'll explain this to you. I'm just getting it marked up so I can tell you. Line 610, I think I want the spouse to be able to stay as long as they want, even though the group is gone. These are widows. And so I'd like to delete the sentence beginning with us on line 610. Delete the sentence after the word death and the sentence starting the spouse all the way down to 612 with the word program. So we'll delete that. And what we're doing is we're allowing some continuity here. So if there's been people in the group and the widow wants to stay in, but now the group has moved on to somewhere else and she happens to like being in there, the one person's not going to change much actuarial stuff. She's been there, and suddenly the group changed to somewhere else and different doctors, and I think it's just less stressful for her. So this is changing the current policy, but I think it's a good change. All in favor of that, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Let me explain what you've got here now.
Mr. Chair, can you just come back to that one?
Yeah.
So, do you have any information on how many spouses this involves? How do we know what the actuarial impact is going to be on that?
Right now, I don't know that. I figure it's a pretty small number of spouses of people who leave. This is going to go to state government finance, and so it'll be now a stricken line, so they can look at it and see. That's a fair question. I don't know the answer. Oh, Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair, on the change on...
You're my actuary for the day here?
No, Mr. Okay. Chair. On the change you made on line 5.22, where you changed the must to may on the 3 times premium, do you mean to... Would you want to say maybe up to 3 times? So that they don't have to decide, so it's not, you know, all or nothing?
I do, yes. That's what I'd like. Because my whole goal in this is to find new ways for people to participate in a group. And so the commissioner might want to get some really nice risk people in there and incent them by giving them less of a bar. So let's vote on up to. All in favor of inserting up to on panel line 5.2. Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. What you have, we've done some, and so what the net effect is here is we've cleaned up the board, actually an advisory committee for me, but it's not a board. The commissioner can do what they like. I'll get here. In this situation, the bargaining unit can tell the employer they want to stay, but when they come, they have to stay for, I think, 3 years now in this. Is that right? They have to stay for 3 years. And so they know what they're getting into. They get 60 days notice to leave. And if the premiums go up more than 20% beyond inflation, they can automatically go without penalty. So there's some protection for that. There was 50%, which to me seemed to be unconscionable. And if they don't, and the current also on page 4, if they do leave and they just quit paying, they owe the money. Because right now, if they leave without paying the money, they just get kicked out, which is a pretty good deal if you're having a bad year. And so you can start out fresh with somebody else. Also, we've clarified what kind of modernized the language on providers.
Where are those?
Where's the provided language, Mr. Pender?
No, it's the bottom of page 4, Mr. Okay. Chair, going on to page
5. Oh, it's place of provider. Ironically, I took out the word chiropractic and just put in providers to be more generic. Because now, in this time, there weren't physician's assistants, advanced practice nurses, and so on. So they're all treated with the extent of their scope of practice, so it's much cleaner. And so that's what you have. I think it's an improved fee, and I think they'll be able to make a better run at serving the people. And I know that the commission talked about putting out two products, HSA one and a regular one, I think, based upon the Doer model, or the CGIP model. Representative Tremba, did you have a question?
Well, yeah, Mr. Chair, I just want some clarification again on 6.10. Did you just delete that because it was reiterating something else, or just tell me?
Oh, well, maybe we need to even, I don't want to take them out of it, but I, right now, if the group left the program, she couldn't be in the program anymore. Mm-hmm. And maybe we want to reword that to say she can stay in as long as she wants. That's my intention, so that she would not be terminated. Mr. Pender, do you need to have language to allow her to stay if the group goes, or did we take out too much language?
Mr. Chair, I'd say if the goal is to let them stay in as long as they want to, I think it should probably say that. So I could say the spouse remains eligible to participate in the program as long as, then we add the spouse chooses to do so, and then strike the rest of that sentence.
All right, that's in November. I move that amendment. And there'll be some questions about actuarial solvency about this along the way. But I think it's a pretty small group of people. Wouldn't you? These are, I don't know how big they are, so that's going to help me.
Chair, is the phrase all or none, is that in the bill we're working on now? You had all or none of the employees.
Yes.
That's in this?
Mr. Pender, can you tell us where, if a group comes in, where does it say all or none?
Mr. Chair, it's actually because groups come in either as union groups or non-union groups, and those choices are made separately. It's set up so that within each category it's all or none. So it's not actually the case that all of the employees of an employer have to necessarily come in, but if a union chooses to bring its members in, which they have the right to do under this, then they have to have all of them. That's on page 3, lines 18 and 19.
This would be by employer. This would be the school district would have to have all their staff come in, all the unionized staff or none of their staff. And then the administrative staff would be, the non-union staff would be negotiated separately. I see a hand. Do you want to come up and talk? That's going to help me.
Well, Mr. Chair, in practically no cases do all the employees decide they want insurance offered by the employer.
Well, no, let me explain. It's just those who are going to, the employer may not offer any other insurance to employers. If they're going to offer insurance, they have to offer this one. It's meant to reduce adverse selection. And so if they're going to bring in, if 30% opt just for the money, then they don't have to include those. Is that right, Mr. Pender? This is of those, they can't have two plans or three plans, and they now could have one. The administration could have its own plan because they're non-union. I tried to make it so that they had a get together, but I didn't want to make this a point of bargaining who's going to go to what plan. So I left it how it was. Does that help?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm concerned about the fact that often an employee will have a spouse that has better insurance someplace else, so they elect not to get any insurance from the employee.
And that's dependent. That's
not anything related to whether that's a good plan or bad plan. It's just that they choose to go with the spouses.
I think it's of those who take up the plan. Mr. Pender, is that rock hard and clear on this, that that people can, if nobody takes the offer, that doesn't count? All of those who take any offer for the plan in the company, right? Your point's well taken. I just want to be sure it's clear.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking for the language here on waiver of
Mr. Johansson,
waiver of coverage.
You came to, you were waving, and you just wanted to say hi to us?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Lee Johansson with Education Minnesota, and I share the concern that Representative Huntley expressed, and then further point out that in most of our collective bargaining agreements, or in fact the employer personnel policies, there are thresholds for eligibility that are locally bargained, 20 hours a week of employment or 30 hours a week of employment before you can even have access to the insurance plan. And if in fact what you're trying to do is ensure that if they take insurance, all those people represented by an exclusive rep would take insurance through PEEP if this was opted for. I have no quarrel with that.
That's my goal.
My concern, of course, is that if you read that sentence literally, it could mean that 100% of the exclusive rep's membership employed in a certain district would have to sign up for insurance, and that would be problematic.
Well, we need to clarify that because it's my intention that would be that way, because we want to make sure we don't just carve out a little niche, and I don't want to keep people out because some people didn't want to come. Mr. Pender, do you have advice on that? While you're thinking about that, we need to move the agenda. We didn't vote on the agenda amendment, I guess. Is that right? Okay, we need to vote on the spouse remains eligible, et cetera. All in favor of that, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. So we're back to the issue about how to clarify the all thing.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Thiessen.
While he's working, Mr. Pender's working on that language, I would like to move to recall, bring up off the table, HF 2831.
Let's just, we'll go back to that.
I'd like to do it now if I can. So I'd like to make that motion.
You would?
Yeah.
You've been counting.
Well, you know.
Okay. It's in order. Who taught you to count?
I don't know.
Fair enough. Yeah, so let's actually motion me to lay aside the one we're working on.
Okay.
And go to that. So you have,
I guess I moved to lay aside the current bill. Is that the first motion?
And we'll just do this. I'm not that fancy here. And to take up that bill. That's a motion that requires a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I can count too. what are you going to move, I wonder?
I would like to move to delete lines 1.3 to 1.6. And honestly, Mr. Chair, that is, I think that this issue on the use of the provider's apology, is actually a very good idea. And I think it runs more cleanly that way as well. Yeah. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me say this. Basically, this bill is residing now in civil law, so this would not kill.
Yeah.
So, consequently, to make you feel any better, I'm not going to oppose your motion.
Justin Thiessen moves to, I don't want to have a big debate about this, Justin Thiessen moves to delete lines 1.3 to 1.6. Any more discussion on this? I think we know what's going to happen. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? A number of yeses to some abstentions. The motion prevails. And I would bet that's going to lay back on the table now, and we'll revert to 2831.
Oh, yeah, is that right? Have to do that.
No, I'm just announcing it. Let's revert to 2831. He was saving paper, too, because that might all fit on one side now.
What?
Probably not. It's still too long. Mr. Pender, did you figure your thing out there?
Mr. Chair, I think that language to deal with that problem of the employees who don't want to participate in the in the employer's health plan. On page 3, line 19, where it says represented by an exclusive representative, insert who participate in the employer's plan. So it would read either all or none of the employees represented by an exclusive representative who participate in the employer's plan, and then followed by the existing words there, must participate, and then I think we should add in the program, just because we're using participate in two different, sort of referring to two different things there.
Does that clarify? That's been my intention.
And then, Mr. Chair, that language was actually duplicated from below on page 3, lines 25 to 26. That's the language dealing with the unrepresented employees, and the all or none language that's in existing law, and I recommend that be changed in the same way.
So that would be after...
So it'd be after
employees and before must on line 3.
Yeah, it'd be after employees, and then who participate in the employer's plan. Employer's plan.
In the program too.
Yeah. Must participate. Let's see. Where am I here? You must participate in the program. After the must participate.
I think that's a good amendment. Listen, help me move that amendment. Get the minutes now. Any questions about that? Is that clear, members? Very good. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? That's adopted. Is there outstanding issues left on this?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Paul.
In subdivision 5, I find that, you know, I have some questions about the existing law.
Good luck on that one.
Yeah. My concern is this, is that when an employer, when public employees and public employers negotiate at a bargaining table, there's give and take. I can think of an instance in my own district where the employer gave up quite a bit on other unrelated work rules to get them to move in, for instance, to a HRA. Now, if all of a sudden this bargaining unit, the employees decide to opt out, well, they opt out, but yet the work rules remain the way they are that were negotiated at the time that the contract was signed. Now, I think it could be argued that this really interferes with the bargaining process amongst employees and employers. And that's been a concern of mine about the existing language. Now, apparently it hadn't been much of a problem because this hasn't been much of a...
There's been nobody in it.
Well, it was the number 4,000.
4,000 lives.
So if indeed this would pass and it became more attractive to more and more people, I guess I'm wondering just how much of an effect it would have on employers' bargaining process and if we have some unintended consequences.
Do you want to sample a random witness? I got one here who's ready to wave his hand there. Mr. Johansson, you want to come back up? Has anybody else, the School Board Association is not here, I don't imagine, but does anybody else want to comment on this? Mr. Johansson, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we heard last week from Commissioner Ludeman that in the restructuring of PEEP, there will be a high deductible offering made available. And so if, in fact, a collective bargaining agreement provides for a high deductible suitable to be compatible with an HSA, that would be perfectly reasonable that would be the option they'd move to. The contract that is established usually sets out what plans, parameters will be offered, and what the employer's contribution towards the premiums will be. And, of course, that doesn't get altered depending on which vendor you go to. The contract is in force in terms of the cost to the district. And so by opting to leave one provider and go to the public employees insurance program, the employer still has only that financial obligation that they committed themselves to in the collective bargaining process.
How does that work in the case of a co-op? Is that also bargained that they want to join a co-op or they want to go on their own?
Mr. Chair, the only option employees have in terms of choice of a vendor is PEEP. Other than that, it's mutually agreed to or determined by the employer. Some collective bargaining agreements cede that authority to the employer, and others don't. But the public employees plan is the only one that grants the exclusive rep the right to opt in.
Ms. Epstein Paul, you want to?
Well, I think I understand that, but
how big a deal is this, Mr. Johansson? Is this a big deal? I mean, if this were, you know, there's 4,000 lives here, maybe there's, I think, 1,700 employees or something, I don't know how many small districts are in PEEP now.
Mr. Chair, I don't know the exact count. It's been quite some time since we've had an advisory committee meeting with PEEP, or a year. But I know, for instance, the Alexandria District, for instance, was the last one, and I think it was 2.5 years ago, exercised that option to the exclusive rep exercised that option. And it was a very important provision for that exclusive rep to be able to do that. And in fact, it's worked out quite well for them in PEEP. Their premium rates there have gone up at a fairly modest rate, and the employees are very happy with that decision. When you have this current situation, the service cooperatives have contracts through joint powers agreements and the like that are designed to limit the ability of the employer to exercise their many options. For instance, if a school district seeks a bid for competitive pricing, just the very act of the district seeking that bid, according to the contract with the service co-ops, that district can be removed from coverage at the service co-op level. But if the exclusive rep has the right to do that, they, of course, cannot cause the district to be removed from the co-op. So there's an advantage, really a mutual advantage for both the employer and the employee, that the exclusive rep have the right to do that.
What, anything else, Representative Powell? I didn't mean to cut you off there.
I don't think for now.
Yeah. Representative Westerberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'd like to take you to page 3 here, and then down by 329 here, I noticed, you know, it went from 2 years to 3 years, and forgive me because I just don't remember exactly why you did that. Can you refresh my memory, please?
Well, there's some comfort in where it's going next. After it leaves here, it's going to go to the State Government Policy or Finance Committee, and Dewar will weigh in on that. The reason I did 3 years was to create more longevity and more stability so people settle in and stay.
And
the exclusive bargaining rep knows when they agree to come for the 3 years, so they don't get to move every year, even if they want to.
And that's what I was assuming, Mr. Chair. But then, now, too, we're changing it from premiums of 50% to 20% in excess of the Consumer's Price Index for all urban consumers. Forgive me, but can you define that for me? I mean, what is our all urban consumers? And how does this work, then? What type of a price difference does this make, then, in the calculation of the premium?
This just allows them, otherwise, I just thought it was, we get more and more year, but at least if it's 20% is way above current trend. And so I wanted to get trend above inflation. I think that's a definition. Mr. Pender was the one who inserted the urban part. Mr. Pender, you want to comment about that
Mr.
term?
Chair, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics calculates inflation and rates of inflation and so on, and I was in a hurry and didn't get to check to see if they still call it this, but the last time I knew, they had an index that was the most widely used one, that was the consumer price index for all urban consumers. And they define urban as something like a city greater than 3,000 people or something is urban. So it's not as if it's based on just large metro areas or something like that. But I did not check to see whether they still call that particular index that exact name.
Representative Westerberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pender, as far as then, can you give me an example? Because, I mean, it's pretty easy to understand, you know, a 50% increase in any 1 year. What type of an increase are you projecting that would, you know, determine whether or not people would be eligible to jump out of this program? What kind of do you have a dollar amount that you'd give me an example on?
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and Representative Westerberg, I guess let's start with the percentages. If the rate of inflation is on the basis of that consumer price index is 4%, then 20% over that would be 24%, or about 1/4. So it'd be about 1/4 increase. So if the premium if the current premium is $1,000 a month for family coverage, then it would be an increase of $250 a month.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, because I think it's really important that, you know, we're taking the steps here to change it to 3 years, because that certainly, like you said, adds stability to the program. And but allowing people to get out at, you know, this type of an example is that, you know, it's considerably less than 50%. And I know you're saying 50% is really onerous, but I guess my final consideration it is I'm wondering, especially if reinsurance does come into play, how does that affect the premiums in the reinsurance pool? Do you know?
Actually, the testimony I've had on reinsurance is that the trend in reinsurance is less than the trend for the underlying policies. That's what I've heard generally from most of the reinsurers. I've talked to a few reinsured people lately. They didn't they like my bill very good, so they were talking to me all the time. So what they talked about, that trend was below market, below the average trend.
Because, Mr. Chair, on the one hand, it appears, you know, that you're trying to make it more stable, you know, by going to the 3 years, which I really like, but then it's making it less stable by making it easier for people to opt out, you know, in at the 20% level. So I guess I was just...
So you might ask around if that seems reasonable to the people in the hallways. My goal is to make this something people want to come to. And so maybe it's a market effort, and the administrator will know they better suck up some reserves and see if they can weather a 19% bump and keep some people in. And at least that way they know that they wouldn't be exposed to a 30% increase. Because we're hoping to attract people here who've experienced trends of 40%. And they've been, at least this way, a nightmare will stop for them. That's the goal. And if you get, and that's why the all or none group and the 3 years. I'm sure there'll be more opinions, but I really, really appreciate your thoughts on that.
Thank you for the education.
Was that this? That's a different bill. Any more questions on this? Representative Paul? Okay.
No.
Let's see, we're going to do a couple of things here. This House Bill 1862 is going to go to state government, and I'm going to combine a couple of these amendments onto this, just so you know, so it can be more complete. And then as I move the different delete alls that we've stuck on the different bills, I will promise the division and the public that whatever changes the particular committee makes that were related to that bill will be brought as an office amendment at the next chance possible. So, and that will make some more sense in a minute. So let's see, now we adopted this already onto the bill. This is already adopted and the amendments are done. I'd like now to also under 1862 move this, I want to bring up this 2438DE8-2. There's one more technical amendment we need to make. And it's Mr. Pender, it's on line 112 for the DE8-2. Each board or provider organization on line 12, that's just a technical thing that they should report those. That just got left off. So if we can incorporate that, is that clear to members? Page 1, line 12. We're requiring each, this is about boards or provider organizations putting standards out. If we just left off one provider organization on line 12. Is that clear, Mr. Pender? So all in favor of that, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted. And now I'd like to, on 1862, adopt everything after line 1.3 from the DE8-2 amendment. Is that clear, Mr. Pender? We're not going to delete everything anymore. We're going to put these on. There will be now two amendments and then actually one other one, too. Any questions about that? The bill we just marked up. So we're going to, 1862 will actually have three of these amendments on it. Questions? Okay. All in favor of that, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted. And then we need to go to the 2832DE1. All right. This is all the, and this is the one going to Commerce, and as Commerce changes it, the next, whichever hearing comes first, likely in State Government Finance, I would guess, would be where this would be finally caught up with.
So I'll move everything after line 1.3 and after, and then I'll recodify the articles to 1862. Members understand that? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If I could just thank. So these are running separately, but also as one larger bill?
They're, right. One is the bigger one.
But so we just, we're,
right.
There's going to still be a 2832 or whatever it is.
There are five bills.
Yeah, okay, I got it.
And each is being, we have 2 weeks from today or tomorrow is the deadline.
Right.
That's the reason for this. I do have one more question of members. The taxes one is going to go, Mr. Huntley.
2 weeks, but it's got to be out of the.
For the last policy committee.
Policy and finance.
Yeah, so I should hit that fine then. If the Chair of Commerce is agreeable for hearing, and if the state government finance, if it has to go to policy,
yeah.
Out of health. I have a question for members. I didn't put the, now we got this smaller version, a little smaller amendment here now, this little apology thing. You can kind of see which might be the vehicle that might move, if you can do the math. Should I put that on here too? Is there any opposition to that? To put the civil law piece on there?
Are you going to make it through all those committees?
No, this is into the 1862, which may become the vehicle that will be the final vehicle. If I put that apology on there, at least that way that's, it'll live there after, if it doesn't get heard in civil law, then I will take it out. If they refuse to hear it there. Does that make sense?
Sure.
I want to just work in the light of day here. Okay, without objection, I will move to also insert everything after line 1.7 from the JTAMD01 on 1662. Members understand that? All in fair.
It should be everything after 1.6.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, that's right. Thank you. So all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted. I have one other amendment that didn't get done that was going to be brought to us. Can I talk about that, Mr. Barr? Okay. Is he still here? There's an amendment related to HMOs, which I guess isn't ready for today. Should I bring that up, or is that okay? Why don't you just come here and talk about it a second? This is our last item, then we're done.
Mr. Chair, did we do the AMD02, that tax one?
Yes.
That would be earlier. Okay.
That's sitting quietly on the table with as long as the bills. Well, Mr. Barr, can I tell me about the amendment that we're going to... It's not drafted yet, right?
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, my name is Jeff Barsh with Health Partners. Actually, did give a language to Mr. Pender, but my apologies to him on the confusion. I forgot to let him know which bill to draft the amendment to. And so it hasn't been drafted. But the language that I talked about with you, Mr. Chairman, was simply to allow... HMOs and their license in the state, the same flexibility and product offerings that's currently enjoyed by MCHA, which is the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association. As all of you know, that's the group that's responsible for writing and issuing products to those who can't get coverage in the private marketplace. Specifically, the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association allows for products to be offered with a $5,000 deductible for an individual, $10,000 for a family, and out-of-pocket maximum levels at those same dollar amounts. Also, the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association has a lifetime maximum benefit in statute at $2.8 million. Currently, there is no lifetime maximum benefit allowed for HMO products in this state, and so we were asking for a lifetime maximum benefit of $3 million, which is higher than what MCHA's level is currently in statute, but if I'm not mistaken, that's probably what they're allowing in practice. For products that they offer. So the amendment was simply to give us the same flexibility that's currently enjoyed by the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association, not to exceed that, even though insurance companies and self-insured employers in the state have flexibility that exceeds those certain levels.
And in some cases, $300,000 or even less in the lifetime maximum, some of those self-insured plans. So the amendment will be then for two parts. One is the lifetime cap of $3 million and then allowing deductibles to go to $5,000. Again, hoping to capture, my motivation is to get them flexibility to try to capture some of the people who otherwise wouldn't have nothing and so they wouldn't lose their house. So that'll be coming forward. It'll be, you know, vote how you like, but Now, we have to revisit that other thing, Mr. Pender, about the co-ops. And did we do that already about giving the release and information to the board or the bargaining unit? Did we do that already?
No, Mr. Chair. I think I wrote some language for it, though.
I think this is our last thing, unless I...
If I can remember what bill it's in.
It's the commerce, it's the second to last page of the meat board. It's 2832DE1. It's on line 11.9 of the...
Mr. Chair, the language I suggest is... On page 11, this is of the H2832DE1, on page 11, line 9, at the end of the line, delete the period and insert a comma, and then add, and must also provide that same information to exclusive representatives of the employees upon request.
Mr. Walsh, that's going to nod that that's language that makes sense. Yeah. This is actually just clarifying current practice. What I would request is, that's all that we have to move on. Any questions about that, members, to understand it? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That's adopted. What we have now are five bills before us. We voted on Wednesday at 4:30. The room is undetermined because they had left to go to the staff thing, which you can all go to. I'm going to ask Mr. Pender and his staff there to provide some amendments, some delete-alls, if you will, to reflect each of our work today. And that should be interesting to do, but as soon as they're ready, they'll be available. I think that they're not so complicated that people can function. They can't function until they get them, because I think it's straightforward what we did, but it'd be cleaner to know that, to see that. So it's going to be ready by 4:30 on Wednesday, but hopefully by Wednesday morning, I would think. Could that be reasonable? Yeah. And then we'll get copies. And if you're in the audience and want a copy the minute they're off the press, tell Jennifer, she'll get you one. Members want copies that are fresh and hot. She can provide that to you. Questions from members?
I had an announcement when you're done.
Go ahead. I'm done.
You have about 15 minutes to get down to the Freeman Building for their grand tour.
Oh, that's right. Does that go till 7 or 6?
It goes to 7, and they're having, I understand, tours every half hour.
Right.
And you got to go, you're going inside, you go to the Centennial Building, and you get out, and you have to go past the Stassen Building. And next in line down there is the Freeman Building.
Everybody go to the Freeman Party. I would appreciate everybody's work and your attendance of the audience. And if there are questions about this, let me know. Otherwise, we're adjourned until Wednesday at 4:30 somewhere.